"Jesus, Mike, this can't be legal," I'd said when my friend unrolled the hawking mat from his backpack. We were on Island 241, as the hegemony traders had so romantically named the desolate volcanic blemish which they had chosen for our R&R site. Island 241 was less than 50 kilometers from the oldest of the colonial settlements, but it might as well have been 50 light-years away. No native ships were to put in at the island while Los Angeles crewmen or Farcaster workmen were present. The Maui Covenant colonists had a few ancient skimmers still in working order, but by mutual agreement there would be no overflights. Except for the dormitories, swimming beach, and the duty-free store, there was little on the island to interest us shipmen. Someday, when the last components had been brought in system by the Los Angeles and the Farcaster finished, hegemony officials would make Island 241 into a center for trade and tourism. Until then, it was a primitive place, with a dropship grid, newly finished buildings of the local white stone, and a few bored maintenance people. Mike checked the two of us out for 3 days of backpacking on the steepest and most inaccessible end of the little island. "I don't want to go backpacking, for Christ's sake," I'd said. "I'd rather stay on the L.A. and plug into a stim sim." "Shut up and follow me," said Mike. And, like a lesser member of the pantheon following an older and wiser deity, I had shut up and followed. 2 hours of heavy tramping up the slopes through sharp-branched scrub trees brought us to a lip of lava several hundred meters above the crashing surf. We were near the equator on a mostly tropical world, but on this exposed ledge the wind was howling and my teeth were chattering. The sunset was a red smear between dark cumulus to the west, and I had no wish to be out in the open when full night descended. "Come on," I said. "Let's get out of the wind and build a fire. I don't know how the hell we're going to set up a tent on all of this rock." Mike sat down and lit a cannabis stick. "Take a look in your pack, kid." I hesitated. His voice had been neutral, but it was the flat neutrality of the practical joker's voice just before the bucket of water descends. I crouched down and began pawing through the nylon sack. The pack was empty, except for old flow foam packing cubes to fill it out. Those and a harlequin's costume, complete with mask and bells on the toes. "Are you goddamn crazy?" I spluttered. It was getting dark quickly now. The storm might or might not pass to the south of us. The surf was rasping below like a hungry beast. If I had known how to find my own way back to the trade compound in the dark, I might have considered leaving Mike Osho's remains to feed the fishes far below. "Now look at what's in my pack," he said. Mike dumped out some flow foam cubes and then removed some jewelry, of the type I'd seen handcrafted on Renaissance Vector. An inertial compass, a laser pen which might or might not be labeled a concealed weapon by ship security, another harlequin costume, this one tailored to his more rotund form, and a hawking mat. "Jesus, Mike," I said while running my hand over the exquisite design of the old carpet, "this can't be legal." "I didn't notice any customs agents back there," grinned Mike. "And I seriously doubt that the locals have any traffic control ordinances." "Yes, but..." I trailed off and unrolled the rest of the mat. It was a little more than a meter wide and about 2 meters long. The rich fabric had faded with age, but the flight threads were still as bright as new copper. "Where did you get it?" I asked. "Does it still work?" "On garden," said Mike, and stuffed my costume and his other gear into his backpack. "Yes, it does." It had been more than a century since old Vladimir Sholokhov, old Earth emigrant, master lepidopterist, and EM systems engineer, had handcrafted the first hawking mat for his beautiful young niece on New Earth. Legend had it that the niece had scorned the gift, but over the decades the toys had become almost absurdly popular, more with rich adults than with children, until they were outlawed on most hegemony worlds. Dangerous to handle, a waste of shielded monofilaments, almost impossible to deal with in controlled airspace, hawking mats had become curiosities reserved for bedtime stories, museums, and a few colony worlds. "It must have cost you a fortune," I said. 30 marks, said Mike, and settled himself on the center of the carpet. The old dealer in Carvnail Marketplace thought it was worthless. It was, for him. I brought it back to the ship, charged it up, reprogrammed the inertia chips, and voila! Mike palmed the intricate design, and the mat stiffened and rose 15 centimeters above the rock ledge. I stared doubtfully. All right, I said. But what if it... It won't, said Mike, and impatiently patted the carpet behind him. It's fully charged. I know how to handle it. Come on, climb on, or stand back. I want to get going before that storm gets any closer. But I don't think... Come on, Marin! Make up your mind. I'm in a hurry. I hesitated for another second or two. If we were caught leaving the island, we would both be kicked off the ship. Shipwork was my life now. I had made that decision when I accepted the 8-mission Maui Covenant contract. More than that, I was 200 light-years and 5.5 leap-years from civilization. Even if they brought us back to hegemony space, the round trip would have cost us 11 years worth of friends and family. The time debt was irrevocable. I crawled on the hovering hawking mat behind Mike. He stuffed the backpack between us, told me to hang on, and tapped at the flight designs. The mat rose 5 meters above the ledge, banked quickly to the left, and shot out over the alien ocean. 300 meters below us, the surf crashed whitely in the deepening gloom. We rose higher above the rough water and headed north into the night. In such seconds of decision, entire futures are made.